Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, August 8th, 2011. I am Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And please note that our shows will also be archived on DrSaputo.com.
Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we have a great show for you today that's going to include the surprising health benefits of vitamin K, even if you're on Coumadin.
And a plant hormone that can kill cancer cells and has no toxic effects.
And how is the new congressional DEP deal going? Lots of health problems there with healthcare and Medicare, right?
And is weight gain really about choice and willpower? Plus, we have a couple of other things that have come up just recently this week about health food raids.
Oh, my God. Can you believe that? And, with drawn guns, no less.
And whooping cough immunizations for the schools.
Right. Let's just fill us full of more immunizations.
And much, much more. Plus, if you want to join in our conversation and have questions about our health topics, give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888.
Okay.
So what's going on here with these 12 guys like government terrorists that came with a big truck with a SWAT team last week, and they arrested people calling it conspiracy, and they poured out their raw milk in and then they drove off with all their produce. They figured they took about $30,000 to $50,000 worth of food.
Listen, you definitely need drawn guns for that from the FDA, CDC, and the LA Police Department, and the SWAT teams. Democracy.
These are government terrorists. They're taking away our food freedom. This happened at Rossum Foods, where they took all this raw milk. I guess it was mostly like goat milk and sheep milk from the Amish. And they took they also took their cash that was in their cash drawers, their calendars, their computers. They just wiped them out, and they poured this milk out. And they had a place that was right next door that I think that was for people that don't have homes,
homeless
you know,
people.
For the homeless.
Sure.
And they put this guy that was in charge of it in jail with $123,000 bail. Can you imagine that? I mean, this was...
Well, Big Brother's taking care of you, Vicky. You don't have to worry about it anymore. They'll take care of all your little needs. If you do something they don't have in mind, you might have a problem.
But this is big time. This is the FDA, the FBI, the
Department
of Agriculture.
But it's not the first time. Let's go back 30 years ago to, you know, with what happened up north. There was a researcher up there who was doing a lot in the way of nutritional medicine.
Oh,
that's
yeah,
Jonathan
with nutritional
Wright.
Supplements.
And he's got all of his supplements there. And Jonathan Wright is one of the foremost experts in nutrition, who's a physician, by the way, as well. And the FDA comes in with their guns loaded and threatening him and taking all of his products and his records. And the next thing you know is he's out all this. But he went to court, stood up to them. He got that order rescinded. They had to reimburse him for his problems. And look what happened to Stanislaw Brzezinski, the same thing. The guy in Texas, okay, who's been doing work with antineoplastins, which are using to treat cancer. And what he went through is unbelievable. And we talked about this on the show a few weeks ago and gave a reference site. You can go to Stanislaw Brzezinski's website and listen to the video, or you can go to naturalnews.com and listen to the video that Stanislaw made that's very high quality. It shows you how much the government is out to stop people from doing some good things if they're outside the mainstream. Money talks, and if you interfere with what somebody's income is, and they're big corporations that have lots of clout with Congress, you got a problem.
And
that's what he found.
And to be charging these people with felony conspiracy, I mean, our country's in debt, and we're spending time raiding a raw store. This was a co-op, and people signed documents for their own health, but maybe we should talk about raw milk, because when milk is pasteurized, what it does is it just kills all the nutrients in it. It kills the germs, but it also kills all the nutrients with
it. Well, there's a legitimate problem here, and we have to be clear about that, because we don't want to have people who are immunocompromised, people with AIDS or advanced problems with immunity.
Or infants.
Some infants, maybe with raw milk, although what do you think breast milk is?
That's raw?
Anybody pasteurize their breast milk?
Well, I think that some of the places do that are like La Leche
places
where they give milk to other,
to
other babies. But you know what happens with pasteurized milk if they give it to a baby calf?
Yeah, in 6 weeks they're all gone.
That kills them.
Yeah.
It kills them.
Well, there's something to say about staying in tune with nature and respecting what it does and trying not to alter it the way that we do, because we get into trouble.
But these animals that have that we're getting the raw milk from are organic animals. They're taken well care of.
The Amish do lots of really good things.
And they don't have the antibiotics and the hormones and all the toxins
and the pesticides.
That's right. Yes.
Well, it's the problem. If there's some kind of microbe that might be there, for some people are immunocompromised, there's a point there. But those people should know better than to buy raw milk, and there are warnings.
And they sign documents for their own health when they buy this milk.
And this is a co-op, too. I mean, all these people are buying the products are very knowledgeable because it's co-op. They own part of it. So it's something that's done that's a community effort, and Big Brother's coming in and saying, no, I don't think we're going to allow that.
Well, plus they took all their produce, like their mangoes and their watermelon and everything. It was like a drug bust.
Well, it's exactly how they look at it. And when you've got all these people coming in with loaded guns and helmets on, and they're wearing armor-plated stuff on their bodies, they're not taking it lightly. They're really just trying to set an example. And there are laws now that stand behind that. So what's happened is our Congress has taken the power from the people and given it to the government to be able to regulate what we can and cannot eat.
It's like a police state.
It is a police state from that point of view. And there's the evidence, just as it was with Jonathan Wright's story, with his supplements and his vitamins and his herbs. And we've got the same problem here now going on year after year after year with the Codex Alimentarius and with the laws that were passed in 1992 that said that any new product that's going to be coming out that's a supplement that hasn't been approved since 1992, they're going to not allow them to sell it anymore. So there are lots of rumors about what's happening, and there are people who are actually taking action to stop this. But the problem is that we're on the losing end of the deal, and we have to start standing up for our rights. We need to not just be outraged about things. We need to take some kind of action. It's not about being hacked off about something and just totally outraged. You've got to do something on top of that. So when it's time to donate dollars or to take a stand or write a letter to your congressman or get on the phone and talk to your friends who have some kind of political pull, if you don't do that, you're not going to have what's left of the democracy we have today. It's primarily a corporate democracy.
Well, the same thing is happening with cancer therapy. You touched on Stanislaw Brzezinski, but it just came out this week also in the news about methyljasminate. It's a plant hormone that can actually disrupt cancer cells, but not the normal cells. Mm-hmm. And this is the kind of cancer therapy that I thought that we wanted instead of chemo that kills the healthy with the cancer cells. Now, last week we talked about artemisinin.
Well, let's be fair about jasminates first. First of all, not enough research has been done. I'll be the first one to say that. But of the cases where it has been used, it's been safe. We know that in a test tube, not in a human being, in a test tube that you can kill with these plant stress hormones called jasminates, breast cancer, prostate cancer, melanoma, lymphoma, and leukemia at least. And that's good to know. But we need to do some more research. And what this whole segment is about today is that the National Institutes of Health has a responsibility to we the people. And they forget that because they're so engrossed with research with the pharmaceutical companies that seems to be something that takes far more precedence than doing things that don't have a return on investment like this because they're natural and can't be patented. And, of course, the drug companies aren't going to be involved with supporting something like that either. So when we're looking at something like methyljasminates, how do they work is the first question.
Well, first of all, too, there's no downside to it.
It doesn't really have the side effects.
Would it hurt for a person to try it and give them some hope?
Well, if you do enough studies on this, you might find out. But so far, not a whole lot of people have taken it, and it seems to be okay. And what's really neat is the way it works. What it does is it kills, it selectively kills the energy packets in cancer cells that are called mitochondria, but it only kills cancer mitochondria, not normal mitochondria, which is really amazing. Nobody knows the mechanism of it, but we know that happens. And whenever these substances, these jasminases, are put into the human body, there's a release of something called cytochrome C oxidase, which is the major enzyme that's inside the mitochondria that's responsible for making the energy that the mitochondria makes, which is ATP. And it also destroys the membrane of the mitochondria by depolarizing it so it can't function. Now the cancer cell's in big trouble, because it can't make energy very well, even though in general cancer cells don't have a lot of mitochondria to begin with. But when you get rid of what's left, that could be like a lethal blow to it. So there's great promise for this, these drugs in the jasminate family that we should be looking at.
And we talk about side effects. I mean, think about chemotherapy. Look at all the toxic side effects with that, and those are approved.
Yeah, well, that's right. That's why it's the responsibility of the National Institutes of Health to fight for the people, do the research for the people, not be in bed with corporate America, particularly Big Pharma, regulating what kind of research that they'll do. We need to do something to see that this changes. You can't have a system that doesn't represent the people if we're paying for it with our tax dollars. That's where it comes from. I understand Big Pharma not wanting to pay for the research for products that they can't patent, because they'd be spending hundreds of millions of dollars on research, and then when it comes out, because you can't patent it, anybody can say thank you very much for doing the research, but now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your substance, I'm going to make it myself, and I have $300 or $400 million edge on you because I didn't have to spend it on the research, so I can sell this drug for less than you can. That's the problem Big Pharma has. But we need to do something to change, to equalize that playing field, and that's where the dollars that come from the National Institutes of Health should be making up for it.
I'd also like to bring up that there's a documentary that's out now that's called Cancer is Curable Now, and it talks about some advanced cancer treatments from over 30 different cancer experts, and it's mostly about alternatives and some of the alternatives for cancer therapy, because a lot of alternatives are not allowed in our country.
Well, they kind of, that's true. Some of them absolutely are.
I mean,
are
we
not.
Allow chemotherapy and radiation and surgery, but many of the others aren't. And there
well,
are,
some are at the same time, but you're making a good point here. If you want to get immunoadjunctive therapy, you're going to go to the Bahamas. If you want to get the real Gerson stuff, you're going to go to Mexico. If you want to do some of the other therapies that are very specialized and have to do with stem cells, you're not going to get them in this country. You're going to get them someplace else. And there are issues, okay, that need to be dealt with in terms of safety. But, you know, with the laws being pretty much changing now, so that a lot of medical doctors can use any kind of treatment that they want, so long as they don't try to dissuade their patients from taking mainstream therapies, and so long as they don't hurt them. And we're cleaning up all that business. The California Citizens for Health Freedom under Frank Cooney has been doing some wonderful work, some of which I participated in back in 2004. We went to Sacramento and got a law passed saying what I just said. But the problem has to do with cancer treatments, at least in the state of California, where there's an old public health law that still stays on the books that says that it's a felony in California to treat cancer with anything except radiation, chemotherapy, or surgery.
And they can even take your children away if you don't agree and want to do
it. Well,
those
are they can force treatment on people to do that. That's right. But from the point of view of the doctors, they're in a bind, because even though the medical board is not prosecuting anybody, there's a public health law that's on the books that says that it is a felony. So we're in the process of going back to Sacramento now. And again, it's through California Citizens for Health Freedom. Go to that website. See what's happening there. And actually, on September 2nd, we're having an event in Los Angeles where there are going to be a bunch of movie stars and people who are really interested in trying to promote that this there should be freedom to choose the kind of therapy that you want when it comes to cancer. We're going to do something to change that law. Hopefully that will happen within the next 6 to 12 months.
And some of the therapies that are offered at some of the top clinics around the world for cancer are things like ozone therapy and hyperbaric oxygen therapy and insulin potentiated treatments and hyperthermia and anti-cancer herbal formulas, as well as diet and other sorts of things.
Well, doctors have had to tiptoe around saying that what they're doing is they're treating something other than the cancer. So when you're using certain kinds of treatments, you can say, well, we're boosting immunity, or we're making the metabolic terrain stronger so it can fight against cancer. It's not like this is a treatment against the cancer, because if you came out and said that, you'd be vulnerable to this old public health law, at least in the state of California. I don't know how many other states have laws like that, but not all of them do.
Well, this film, this documentary is pretty powerful, Cancer is Curable Now, because they refer to what we do as cut, burn, and poison. Well, and they call conventional cancer treatment medieval. So they really go overboard to the other side.
Well, but we don't want to get into a big argument there. The idea isn't to throw out some of the good things that are in conventional cancer therapy, because there are some good things in it. But it should be done in an integrative way. We shouldn't be just looking at one style of practice. That doesn't make any sense. What we need is a style of practice that looks at everything that's possible, because let's face it, we haven't found the answer to cure cancer, whether it be in mainstream or complementary alternative medicine or the East or in the West.
Yeah, but nobody's making it easy for us to find it.
That's the point. That's exactly right. But it still means we should be working together.
Definitely.
I don't want to throw out Western chemotherapy, but at the same time, if I had a pancreatic cancer, that's the last place I'd look for treatment. I'd be looking for Nicholas Gonzalez in New York and saying, what can you do with your enzyme therapy here? Because I see that instead of living a year, a lot of your patients are living 5 and 10 years. I want to know about that. And that should be legal.
And quality of life is important.
That too. And most of the treatments that are done in complementary alternative medicine are non-toxic. Most of the treatments in the mainstream are toxic.
And many times I've noticed that people that have the cancer aren't really feeling so bad, and then they start with the therapy, and then they really feel
sick.
That's
what does them in a lot of the time.
And a lot of times it doesn't work. I mean, sometimes it does work, but, you know, and you have to figure if it's going to work, maybe it's worth it to feel bad. But
well, how about you doing a combination of a kind of treatment that could work, say, for breast cancer? There would definitely be some forms of conventional therapy that I would endorse for some people. But there would also be a number of therapies in complementary alternative medicine that I would endorse as well. And why wouldn't you? I think it would be very unusual for me to go with just a mainstream treatment. At the worst, I might think of something like insulin potentiated therapy, where you can use about 10% of the normal dose of chemotherapy instead of having the full dose, because that's how the system works, and it still kills the cancer cells. And then add to that other things. Why wouldn't you use something like IV vitamin C
or artemisinin, or
this methyl jasmine, and maybe several of them at once? Why wouldn't you do that?
And why are they resistant to nutrition? I mean, that's basically what happens at the Gerson Clinic. They give you juicing,
well, that's
you know,
part of it.
Vegetable juices and flaxseed oil.
Well, they do a lot of things at Gerson, some of which I think are good and some of which I think are archaic. I mean, that's one particular therapy that has not advanced over the past 75 years. What they're doing is same old as Max Gerson did. That's Charlotte's father. And I think that the nutrition is a very important part of what you do. And I add that to everybody's treatment if they can stand it. So what I'm inclined to do is make sure they do the juicing, which I think is the really most important part of that. So I like the idea of combining therapies and taking a little of this and a little of that and seeing what happens, rather than just limiting myself to either complementary and alternative or to just mainstream approaches. So that's where we stand with that. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuti here with Nurse Vicki. The number, if you have a question about what we're talking about or something about your health, give us a call. It's 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. And it's time for Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Something to think about and learn from and respect with our older generation. The green thing.
The green thing?
The green thing.
What do you mean the green
thing? Well, in the line at the store, this cashier told an older woman that she should bring her own grocery bags because plastic bags weren't good for the environment. And then the woman apologized and explained, you know, we didn't have the green thing back in my day. And the smart-ass clerk responds, well, that's our problem today. Your generation didn't care enough to save our environment. Well, he was right. You know, our generation didn't have the green thing in its day. But back then, we returned milk bottles and soda bottles and beer bottles to the store.
That's right.
And the store sent them back to the plant to be washed and sterilized and refilled so it could use the same bottles over and over.
Indeed.
So they really were recycled. But, you know, we didn't have the green thing back in our day. You know, we walked upstairs because we didn't have an escalator in every store and office building. And we walked to the grocery store and we didn't climb into a 300 horsepower machine every time we had to go two blocks. But, you know, she was right. We didn't have the green thing. Well, back then we washed the baby's diapers. I remember doing that because we didn't have the throwaway kind.
The plastic ones.
And we dried clothes on a line,
in
an energy gobbling machine burning up 220 volts. Wind and solar power really did dry the clothes.
It's true.
And kids got hand-me-down clothes from their brothers and sisters and friends. And
they were made out of natural things. Yeah. Like cotton.
No polyester.
That's right. Right.
And not always brand new clothing. But that old lady's right. You know, we didn't have the green thing back in our day.
You're right.
And remember when we had one TV or radio in the house, not a TV in every room, and the TV had a small screen the size of a handkerchief? Remember them?
I remember playing with my crystal set listening to the radio. That's right.
Well, not a screen the size of the state of Montana.
That's right.
In the kitchen, we blended and stirred by hand because we didn't have electric machines to do everything for us. And when we packaged a fragile item to send in the mail, we used a wadded-up old newspaper to cushion it, not styrofoam or plastic bubble wrap. And back then, we didn't fire up an engine and burn gasoline just to cut the lawn. We used a push mower, rather, that ran on human power. And we exercised by working, so we didn't need to go to a health club to run on treadmills that operate on electricity. But, yes, you know, she's right. We didn't have the green thing back then. Well, we drank from a fountain when we were thirsty instead of using a cup or a plastic bottle every time we had a drink of water.
That's right.
And remember when we refilled writing pens with ink instead of buying a new pen? And we replaced the razor blades in a razor instead of throwing away the whole razor just because the blade got dull?
That's right.
Well, back then, people took the streetcar or a bus, and the kids rode their bikes to school or walked instead of turning their moms into a 24-hour taxi service.
We even had horses before that, right?
Yep, and we had one electrical outlet in a room, not an entire bank of sockets to power a dozen appliances, and we didn't need a computerized gadget to receive a signal beam from satellites 2,000 miles out in space in order to find the nearest pizza joint. But isn't it sad that the current generation laments about how wasteful we old folks were just because we didn't have the green thing back then. You know, and remember, most of this packaging is harmful to our health, and the plastic water bottles and the milk carton linings and the disposable product ingredients like the disposable diapers. And then there's the electromagnetic fields and the computers and the cell phones and so many technical gadgets. And then think about our artificial exercise with the treadmills and the escalators and the overdependence on our cars. You know, we waste so much unnecessary electricity. Our neighbors or the homeowner associations would complain if we hung our clothes outside to dry. And a lot of this stuff really is unnecessary, and it's so wasteful and harmful to us and to our environment. So hopefully this will make you think. And it is a good idea to take your own bags when you go to the grocery store. Every little bit does help. And let's just all do our part to make a difference and make going back in time to the past our future. Think about it.
That's really good, Vicki. That's an awesome presentation that really shows how far we've gone backwards as we've moved to the future. I think what we need to do is return to some of those old things. We've lost our lifestyle. You know, even though we have computers and we have ways of connecting and Skype and all the things that we do, that's interesting, but we don't have the same old one-on-one stuff. I mean, when the telephone came out, that was even a big deal that changed things a lot. But It's living your life as naturally as possible is probably going to give us the most joy out of life. We get so geared into making money and to having things that we lose track of the fact that we're human beings living on planet Earth, and we should be respecting ourselves, embellishing our relationships, and respecting the planet.
And also, we live such a fast-paced life. It's like nobody just sits and relaxes while they're waiting or while they're in the car. It's like that's the time to make the phone calls, and that's the time to work on our cell phones.
Where's the free time to get into nature and look at a tree or a river, or to look at the stars at night, or be connected with one another?
Last night I was reading about vision quests, and there are groups that take adolescents on some of these vision quests. In other words, they're out in nature and learning to just get away from stress and life and be totally by themselves, because they spread out in nature. And actually, one of the days, they don't take any food with them. They only just take water. So they actually fast and just see where nature takes them. And then afterwards, they talk about their thoughts and everything. But they said that some of these kids actually looked forward to getting away and being by themselves and relaxing. Because, they're just constantly on their cell phones, which is not a healthy thing anyway, and on their computers and never without them. They might, for heaven forbid, miss a call.
It's an electronic world of detachment is what's turned out to be. Anyway, that's an awesome tip. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health or want to join in our conversation.
Well, before we get into the vitamin K and some of the other topics that we said we were going to talk about, there is something else that just came to light that really bothered me. I got an email for our granddaughter's school saying that all the kids in the whole school district are required to get these DTaP vaccinations, which is for the whooping cough. And I wanted us to talk about that, because is this really a healthy thing for the kids to do? And are there side effects? And are they really required to do it? I mean, the school system says that they're required to do this. I want to know why it's being promoted.
Well, in the state of California, Governor Brown signed a law into effect, which says that you have to take the whooping cough vaccine. That's the pertussis vaccine. However, there are always exclusions that are possible. One, if you've had a reaction to the vaccine in the past, you don't have to take it. That's, well, thanks. But also, if you have any kind of reason that's personal, has to do with your way of living, your spirituality, your religion, you can opt out from taking the vaccine. And I think that's what people should do, because this vaccine is nuts.
Well, first of all, what's the difference between this and a DPT? Because all little children are told to get it by their pediatrician.
Well, it's just another form. The DTaP is a little different form of the DPT.
So and why are they saying it again?
Well, they want to have a booster effect from it. So they want everybody to be sure that they're immunized against pertussis. The vaccine doesn't work that well to start with, so it has to be given repeatedly to have an effect, according to them. But the problem, and also you're getting diphtheria and tetanus immunizations along with that, which do you really need? Do you want to put something into somebody if they don't need it? That's a real question, because, I mean, why would you do something like that?
So it's not just the whooping cough.
No, it's other things as well.
And are people really getting sick from whooping cough and dying from it enough to warrant this?
It's
to
not
require
that lethal disease.
All these kids to get it?
I think the big danger is for infants about under the age of 3 months, because they don't have a mature immune system, and they're vulnerable to a lot of illnesses, including whooping cough. And they have a small windpipe, so they're more inclined to have inflammation that could close it off more. And some of them have to be put into hospitals for that reason. So we don't want our infants particularly to be exposed to it. And they're the ones who have all the deaths. And there aren't that many, by the way. In the whole state of California, there were 10 deaths last year. And there aren't any this year, 2011. And this is a year where they're saying, oh, we've got to step on it. We've got to give all these immunizations so we can build up what they call herd immunity. Well, this whole thinking is nonsense.
Well, herd immunity means so that the older kids get the shots to protect the baby. So if they have a baby brother or sister.
That's right. That's right. But this whole concept is nonsense, because we don't even know what these immunizations do. And you can say that for almost any immunization there is. We don't know, because we don't have the clinical trials that look at one group that's given the immunization and another group that hasn't been given the immunization, and then look to see what happens to those people. Do the ones who got the shot not get the whooping cough, and is there a lower rate of morbidity and mortality? And the ones that get the shot, do they have side effects that are a problem? And in the group that doesn't get anything, what happens to them? Then you'd have hard data. These are easy studies to do, but they've never, ever been done.
Well, look at all the money that they're going to be making from all these vaccines. When I went down to our little town the other day, I noticed that there's signs in front of the pharmacies saying, you know, DTaP vaccines here, shingles vaccines, flu vaccines, and those sandwich board signs.
Well, the whole thing's nonsense. The whole issue of immunizations, as far as I'm concerned, is unproven. So
we have lots of it on our website, drsaputo.com.
Go to Gary Null's website as well. He is the king of or Sherry Tenpenny's website. These are the king and queen, as far as I see it, of people who know a lot about immunizations and have brought this to light. Yet the CDC is standing fast. I don't know what the CDC it should have. It shouldn't be the Center for Disease Control. I don't know what it should be, but I'd be just as happy if they disbanded that whole organization. They do so many stupid things, of which this is one. Anyway, it's time for a station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And when we come back, we'll be talking about vitamin A. Why do you need it? You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about your health or you want to join in the conversation, give us a call.
Vitamin K is rarely talked about in comparison to vitamin C and D and E, and I think it's time to bring it into the limelight because it has so many health benefits besides clotting blood. And so I think let's just talk about why vitamin K is important, even with people that are on the blood thinning drug Coumadin.
Well, when you know, vitamin K, like Vicki said, is sort of like a neglected stepchild. Somebody says something on vitamin K, and people say, what's that? And that, unfortunately, includes doctors most of the time, too. Although when you start talking about the anticoagulant Coumadin or warfarin, that's something that comes up real fast because everybody knows that if you're over-anticoagulated with Coumadin or warfarin, you give vitamin K. It's the antidote.
Well, vitamin K1 is also given to newborns as soon as they're born to clot their blood to prevent, I guess, a brain hemorrhage and that kind of thing.
Well, that happens in 1 in 10,000, and it's pretty controversial, and now it's starting to be given orally. And you wonder the pros and cons. They just talk about lymphoma or leukemias or problems that are associated with it, but nobody really knows.
Well,
I think it's one of the things that we just do like we do a TB skin test if you're a teacher and going to school, and you're wondering what the reason for that might be here when we don't have that much tea around.
Well, they say 1 in 10,000 babies have a deficiency, and it's usually if the mother's on an epileptic or medication or and a premature baby might have more of a tendency for it. So they go ahead and they just give it to everybody, to all
right.
Babies.
But one of the things we don't know so much is that vitamin K protects against osteoporosis. If you're on Coumadin, the blood thinner, which we know knocks your vitamin K way down, or you're on a lot of the drugs like Dilantin or a number of others, you will be at risk for developing problems with osteoporosis. The other thing that happens, which is even more important than that, is that vitamin K is absolutely necessary to regulate calcium metabolism and make sure that calcium goes into the bones and not into the soft tissues like arteries. So it helps to prevent heart attacks, aortic valve disease, and arteriosclerosis in general. So we need to have enough vitamin K. The dark side of
the vitamin K, I guess, actually just moves the calcium out of the arteries.
And it moves it into the bone where it belongs.
Mm-hmm.
It helps you. Yeah, it helps
so that's
keeps
important
you healthy.
For everybody.
Right. If you're on Coumadin, vitamin K is suppressed enough that your risk for developing either arteriosclerosis or heart valve calcification doubles within 3 years, and the risk of osteoporosis as well does. So you're looking at something that's a big factor here. There are so many people who are on Coumadin because of atrial fibrillation or they've had a heart attack and they want to keep blood thin, or there's a problem with some other stroke that's impending. these were, we get gun shy of using vitamin K, but the real truth is that when you're on Coumadin and you're vitamin K deficient, you actually need to take a little bit of vitamin K for two reasons. One is to prevent these side effects, or these natural effects that occur when you're not taking enough vitamin K, but also to make sure that the regulation of the proton or the INR when you're taking Coumadin is kept in a zone that's relatively regular, meaning a lot of people, their protons are up and down, their INRs are up and down. They go from having a high risk of bleeding to a place where they don't have enough anticoagulation to protect against some problem that might be a clotted heart valve or a heart attack or a stroke or some other thing. So giving small amounts, like 45 micrograms per day, of vitamin K2 to people who have Coumadin is a very good idea. It should be regulated fairly much so that you can adjust the dose of Coumadin. And it must have been about 7 or 8 years ago that an article came out in the New England Journal of Medicine talking about that very thing and suggesting that to stabilize the INR and the protons, that people on Coumadin take a low dose of this. So the doctors who are saying, don't eat your green leafy vegetables because we're worried about vitamin K, I mean, oy vey, what they're really doing is they're putting you at risk for developing osteoporosis, aortic valve calcification, arteriosclerosis of the heart and brain, heart attacks and strokes.
Which is what they're trying to prevent. But, exactly. But the leafy green vegetables are K1.
That's true,
and too. K2 is the one that we supplement with.
Yes.
And that you get from animal products and egg yolks, like and meat and cheese and things like that. And you can also get it from probiotics because those promote vitamin K and fermented foods like natto. But evidently there's two forms of K2, so maybe you want to talk about the MK7.
Yeah, there's MK4 and MK7. The only difference between them is that MK4 basically has a very short half-life, so you have to take it far more often and it's harder to regulate. So we generally throw that one out and say use the one that has a long half-life. That's the MK7. So if you're replacing with some vitamin K2 in any setting, it's probably better to use the MK7 form. And that's what we recommend.
And there are a few things that, like celiac disease and ulcerative colitis, that hinder vitamin K absorption. And also, if a person takes too much vitamin A, it can hinder the vitamin K absorption. And also, some of the antibiotics, like the broad spectrum, and something that's called Questrin, that's an artificial fiber, and aspirin and statin drugs.
Right. So that's a pretty good review of vitamin K. It's your friend, not your enemy. Talk to your doctor and be sure that things work out. That it's supervised. Don't just do this on your own. On this show, we do not give medical advice. We give medical information that you should discuss with your doctor. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's last 2020 tip.
A tip that might save your life. Actually, it's a story about an old prospector that shuffled into a town leading an old tired mule. And the old man headed straight for the only saloon to clear his parched throat. Well, he walked up and he tied his mule to the hitch rail. And as he stood there brushing some of the dust from his face and clothes, a young gunslinger stepped out of the saloon with a gun in one hand and a bottle of whiskey in the other. Well, the young gunslinger looked at the old man and he laughed, saying, "Hey, old man, have you ever danced?" Well, the old man looked up at the gunslinger and he said, "No, I never did dance. I never really wanted to." Well, a crowd had gathered as the gunslinger grinned and said, "Well, you old fool, you're going to dance now." And he started shooting at the old man's feet. Well, the old prospector, not wanting to get a toe blown off, started hopping around like a flea in a hot skillet. And everybody was laughing, fit to be tied. And when his last bullet had been fired, the young gunslinger, still laughing, holstered his gun and turned around to go back into the saloon. Mistake. The old man turned to his pack mule, pulled out a double-barreled shotgun, and cocked both hammers. Well, the loud clicks carried clearly through the desert air, and the crowd stopped laughing immediately. The young gunslinger heard the sounds, too, and he turned around very slowly, and the silence was almost deafening. Well, the crowd watched as the young gunman stared at the old-timer and the large, gaping holes of those twin barrels. Well, the barrels of the shotgun never wavered in the old man's hand as he quietly said, "Ha ha! Son, have you ever licked a mule's ass?" And the gunslinger swallowed hard and said, "No, sir, but I've always wanted to."
Oh, jeez.
So, you know, there are a few lessons for all of us here. I think that it could save your life. I think before you decide to be a bully, because it could certainly backfire just like a shotgun, and this could be the tip that saved your life. So never be arrogant. Don't waste ammunition. Whiskey makes you think you're smarter than you are. Always make sure you know who has the power, and don't mess with old men because they didn't get old by being stupid.
That's a little raunchy, but pretty cool. Isn't that the truth?
Well, I think there's lesson in it.
Yeah, well, you know, we sometimes forget about the wisdom of old age. You know, a lot of the time when we retire at age 65, which I'm glad I didn't, it would have been something that would have been a disaster for me, because I like the idea of being involved. And I don't want that gold watch at age 65 that says, okay, you're ready to go play golf for the rest of your life if that's what you want to do, or play tennis or whatever it is that you can do. There are things to be done. And if you keep your mind active, you keep physically active,
and have a purpose.
Yeah, and you do all the things that are for a healthy lifestyle, you're going to be productive into your 80s. And we've got a whole generation of people now that are being wasted. We need to recover them and bring them back into full functionality, because we've lost an important segment of our culture. Youth brings on certain things that are important. We've got the bulls of people that want to change things and make everything new. But we also need the wisdom of age. We've been through it. We've watched what works and what doesn't work. We're open to new change, but we're not stuck on it being about us. We're trying to do something to make the world a better place.
If you have any questions about your health, or you'd like to join into our conversation here at Prescriptions for Health, the number to call is 888-874-4888. That's 874-4888. You know, Congress is reducing Medicare payments, and last week, I guess, we talked about the Affordable Health Care Act and if it really is affordable. So how is the new congressional debt deal going to affect health care and Medicare?
Well, you know, the actual effect that it has is not that big. But what disturbs me the most is that we were lied to, and I know that situations change. But when you start talking about the change you need, and President Obama telling us how he's going to never make any cuts in Medicare or Medicaid, that he's going to bring 30 more million people into the healthcare system, which I think we need to do, but not spending one more dime, didn't talk about any cuts. And now we're talking about up to 2% a year, which could go on for 5 or 10 years and amount to 18 or 20% reduction in exactly the thing he said he wouldn't do. We need healthcare for everybody. We need universal healthcare. It should be a right. And yet that's not what's happening today. We have to do something to reclaim that. We need to pass some laws. We need a constitutional amendment that will guarantee the right to be able to have health coverage.
Well, you know,
or to choose your style of health care that you want, which we don't have.
We have a lot of debts, but why are we picking health care as the place to take the money from?
There's
so many
other
places. We
pick on the poor people. When things get bad, we don't pick on the rich people, because we want to stimulate business, right, and economic growth. Indeed, we do, but not at the expense of people that are in the lower throes of the economy, not the people that are socially handicapped, not those people that are homeless. Those are the ones that need real health care. And you talk about what we've got today in Medicaid and Medi-Cal, it sucks. I know it sucks, because I trained at a hospital where that's what we did, and I know the kind of care they got. And I know that it's gotten worse, and that there are a lot of people that can't get the care they need. They can't afford it. It's not available. They're having long times to wait. There's nobody to explain things to them. It's a terrible system the way it is. Now, to make it worse yet and make it tougher for them to get good care, there's something wrong with that picture.
And the doctors are going to quit. They're going to retire earlier. They don't want to work for peons.
I'm for resurrecting Robin Hood. We need to steal from the rich and give to the poor. And that's what this country needs to start learning about, is how we're going to do that, because we have to do something to make our country work right. and to be fair and to provide the services that we need.
So what's Big Pharma's influence on Congress for...
Well, it's self-serving. It's about trying to sell more drugs. That's what that's about. It's very clear that that's what it's about.
So how does that affect the whole healthcare system?
Well, it doesn't help the healthcare system at all because it keeps us in a place where we depend on drugs rather than depending on wellness and prevention and nutrition and natural therapies about keeping us healthy. We need to be learning about lifestyle medicine. We need to be practicing it as well.
Well, also, this plan is guaranteeing benefits but denying the care that the benefits cover. So
we're in a very precarious place. Things are falling apart. This may be an opportunity for us to reclaim America at the grassroots level and do what we have to bring our democracy back and take it away from the corporations that are now running this place.
Well, the seniors need this health care the most, and then we're going to be denying it to the older people.
And it's the wrong style of health care anyway. I mean, if we went to wellness and prevention and natural therapies, you would see a huge crash economically because that whole segment of our economy that deals with that would be up in arms, and it basically owns Congress.
Well, when you think about it, this whole thing's crazy. It's health care for more people, but then there's going to be fewer doctors, fewer benefits, and less care.
You just summed it up, Nurse Vicki. All right. Looks like we have a call. I think we have Joe on the line. Joe, are you there? Hello? I'm not sure Joe was there. What he had is a question about can you regrow bone in your jaw? And what I'll have to say is if he's talking about osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is something that is relatively uncommon unless you're taking one of the drugs like Fosamax or Boniva or Didronel or there's a whole bunch of drugs called bisphosphonates. They very often, particularly if we have a problem with some kind of dental work or dental surgery of causing the whole jawbone in an area to disintegrate. And the treatment for that is notoriously poor. And what we need to do is go back and find a way to treat this in an effective way that we in the mainstream have nothing for the most part. We're looking mostly at trying to prevent coagulation, so we're looking at anticoagulants and ways of reducing inflammation. But there is a treatment that I think has great potential, and it's the infrared light therapy or photonic stimulation. If you use infrared light therapy in people like this, even though there are not clinical trials proving this, I have the strong suspicion, after working with infrared light for about 11 years now, that it could do a lot to reverse this condition, because what happens is it causes a release of nitric oxide everywhere that you shine that light. And nitric oxide increases circulation, which is what's needed here, because you're losing circulation, and that's why the bone is becoming necrotic. So shining the light on there will enable the circulation to improve. It will also increase the production of ATP, which is the energy currency of the cell. It's the same thing as gasoline is to a car, ATP is to a cell. And if you can convert that light energy that's put into those osteonecrotic cells, those ones that are dying, and give it energy to be able to do its work, there's a very good chance that what will happen is that will increase the circulation and stimulate the recovery process. So I'm not saying that will work, Joe, if you're still listening, but I will say that it's got a good chance. Research needs to be done on it, and the good news is it's not going to hurt you.
The other thing is that there are other ways to build bone that are healthy and natural besides taking bisphosphonates that can have some of these toxic side effects like the Boniva and the Actonel and the Fosamax.
Right. Well, that's right, and that's a good point.
Like vitamin D and vitamin K. And,
well, all these things should be thought about. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the bisphosphonates could be taken off the market. It wouldn't hurt my practice one bit because I simply don't use the drug. I think it's too toxic. And those patients that I have who have osteoporosis or the so-called osteopenia, when I treat them with vitamin D, vitamin K in substantial doses, along with a little bit of strontium, which stimulates osteoblasts to lay down new bone, and a little bit of calcium, not a lot, a little bit, maybe 500 milligrams at the most, within a year or two, all these people are laying down new bone. So it's a great way to go, and I feel very comfortable doing that with my patients.
We have a lot more on this topic on our website, drsaputo.com.
Right. When you start talking about the side effects of bisphosphonates, I mean, it's not just the ulcers and the gastritis and the esophagitis. There's things like severe constipation. You can have muscle and bone pain in many areas of the body. It can be very bad. You can get atrial fibrillation from it. I mean, the list of things that you can get, and of course, the osteonecrosis of the jaw. All these things are serious side effects that do not, in my opinion, justify its use.
And this osteonecrosis of the jaw can be terrible.
It's miserable.
It loosens your teeth and it hurts. And, well, just think about it. Your jaw's falling apart.
Well, that's really right. You know, we were listening to a little bit of TV last night. And, of course, every ad that's on, every other one is from a pharmaceutical company, right? And they're talking about I almost enjoy listening to them. They're like a comedy. Because towards the end of the commercial, half of it's spent talking about it can cause seizures and it can cause diarrhea and it can cause
death.
More mortality to go up and it can make your heart go into failure. I mean, all the things they're talking about. And what does it do? It's maybe making your digestion a little bit better. And there are so many natural ways to do that it's crazy.
I think people must tune it out because they keep going on and on. It's almost like almost the majority of the commercials are on drug side effects.
They don't even hear it. Why? Because they're so troubled by the condition that they have that they'll try anything and hope that it works and that they'll be in the percentage that doesn't have problems. Well, when you look at the people who are having problems and you add up all the different kinds of problems you can get into from these effects that are not side effects, they're expected effects, you got to add them up. And by the time you're through, you're usually over 50% of people who are taking a particular drug is going to have at least one of those side effects, and some of them are major. So we have to put our thinking cap back on. We can't just trust that the pharmaceutical industry is there for our benefit to provide service. They're there for their own damn benefit.
And nobody's done the studies to find out what happens with the chemical reactions of all these different drugs. You know, I was talking
to the fellow
that runs the home where my 95-year-old mother lives, and he said that the majority of people that live there are on at least 15 drugs.
Yeah, well, it's criminal to do that. And that takes usually, not always, usually doctors who don't think for themselves, doctors who are looking for the standard of care in their community, not going one inch past that, not doing their own research, not looking for natural therapies, and not really looking for alternatives to what's being done in the mainstream.
And not paying attention to the side effects.
This is naive arrogance, but it's also laziness. We need to get our doctors back in training. And to begin to learn these new things.
See, how is this going to happen with this new health care bill where they're going to reduce the amount of money that the doctors are going to get paid? We're going to have fewer doctors.
Medicare is going to go down the tubes. If they cut physician fees by 29%, you can bet your sweet that you know what's going to happen. They're just not going to take those patients. Why should they? They've got all these other patients that are HMO patients that are banging their doors down. They don't need Medicare patients. They don't take Medicaid patients. They don't need Medi-Cal patients. Why would they?
They'll just be doing it over the phone.
Well, if they do it at all.
Are the insurance companies, the health insurance companies, are the ones that are regulating a lot of the health care anyway.
Well,
pretty soon,
right.
We probably won't have doctors. We'll just talk to the health insurance agent.
Well, I mean, you try and get a health insurance agent on the line when you're trying to get some kind of service covered, or you try and get in touch with a doctor. Not so easy.
It makes you want to just give up, which is probably their goal.
Well, it costs less money. You make more income. It shouldn't be about dollars and cents. It should be about something that has to do with providing a service and about listening and caring. We've lost that. What happened to the old doc that was traveling in his horse and buggy to go out in the middle of wintertime to treat somebody who's got diphtheria? What happened to that doc?
Yeah, with the house calls.
Exactly.
Actually, we met a couple of doctors that do that when we were in Jackson Hole at a wellness festival.
Well, there's still good people around, a lot of them, and they want to do the right thing. But the problem is they get caught in the middle of two rocks because they need to do what's in the mainstream, because if they do something that's outside the mainstream and they get sued, they're going to lose. And at the same time, they need to be providing the best service they can, and that's usually not what we do in Western medicine. Western medicine is not primary care. It never will be. It never could be. And it doesn't have the potential. It's too invasive. It's too aggressive. It's too dangerous. Natural therapies are what we need. Lifestyle medicine is what we need.
Well, read your book, A Return to Healing.
Everybody should read A Return to Healing, because it's the only book that's out there that tells the whole story from the point of view of somebody that's been in practice for 40 years and says, this is what's wrong with education. This is what's wrong with research. This is the problem that we have with the CDC and the FDA. This is what's wrong with Big Pharma and the insurance industry. And this is what's wrong with our Congress. And by the way, this is what's wrong with our damn culture. And the book has it all there. It's called A Return to Healing. Go buy it.
Well, the other thing is, it's kind of upsetting, I think, is that people go to the hospital and they can't even see their own doctor in the hospital because
right, now we got hospitalists.
Well, you can understand doctors don't want to be on call. They want to have their family time and so forth. But you go to the hospital now, and it's a hospitalist that takes care of you. And the doctor, these are doctors that just specialize in hospital care. So your care is going to be okay. It's just that you don't know the doctor. You don't have a personal relationship with the doctor. And they don't know you.
It gets sterile. You feel alone. You're isolated. You're detached.
And how do they know your history?
Well, they get the information. They just don't tell you. You have to be totally in a weak position where you're listening to what they have to say or just following the advice that they give you. And it's not like it's all bad. I mean, hospitalists do some unbelievably good things. I get sick
in some major way. Too.
I'm going there. Although I know how dangerous it is because I spent some time there about almost a year ago getting a hip resurface. What a ordeal that was. Every doctor should have to go through that so they can learn what actually happens, particularly when things don't go right and you're sitting there in this helpless position.
Trying to run your own health care along with Nurse Vicki.
Yes, we did that. Indeed, we were on Google while I had a blood pressure of 60. Not a fun thing to have to do, but what would you do if you didn't have that as an option? It's a big deal. It's very, very worrisome. All right. It looks like we're at the end of the show here on Prescriptions for Health. It's been fun being with you, and I want to remind you that we'd like to we'll be back to talk with you live on what's new in the news and health, and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.com Internet Radio and on DrSaputo.com. And we'll be there from 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time and 3 to 4 Eastern Standard Time. And they'll also be archived on DrSaputo.com.
And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
If you do that, chances are you're going to do very well. Do something that's integrative. Take care of yourself. Make sure that your lifestyle is the lifestyle that will allow you to have a style that keeps you healthy. Have a great day.